Please be advised that the views and opinions expressed by Richard Martin, Senior Vice President of Global Strategic Investments, LLC, are entirely his own and do not necessarily represent those of the company, its affiliates, or its officers. Investments made on the basis of Mr. Martin's comments are entirely unsolicited by the company and are at the sole risk and prejudice of the listener or investor.
Good afternoon, everybody. Richard Martin here with Richard Martin's Wake Up Call. Getting hotter and hotter in the economy and colder and colder in terms of people's ability to keep up. Let's hear what Ron Paul had to say in front of a very empty Congress last night. It's instructive, and as usual, nobody can say it better than he does. So here goes.
Mr. Chairman, I am pleased to address the House tonight about the budget, because there's been a lot of concern expressed here today on both sides of the aisle about the kind of financial trouble we're in, and there's no doubt about that. But sometimes I think we go back and forth, spending more time blaming each other rather than dealing with the real problem. One of the contentions I've had about the budget is that we look at it as an accounting problem rather than a philosophy problem, because the spending occurs because of what we accept as the proper role of government. And right now, it's assumed by the country as well as the Congress that the proper role of government is to run our lives, run the economy, run the welfare state, and police the world. And all of a sudden, it puts a lot of pressure on the budget. Today, the national debt is going up almost $600 billion, and the economy is getting weaker. There's no doubt about it. We're in a recession. It's going to get much worse, which means that the deficit is going to get a lot worse, and I'm predicting within a couple years, it will not surprise me one bit to see the national debt, the national obligation for future generations, to rise in 1 year of $750 billion, and that is a very possible number. And like it has been expressed so often today, we need to do something about it. The question is, what are we going to do about it? One side, it seems like, well, we just raise taxes, we're going to solve the problem. The other side says, well, all we have to do is get rid of the earmarks. But that argument, I think, falls short, too, because you can vote to cut all the earmarks, but it doesn't cut any spending. It just delivers the authority to spend the money to the executive branch. I think that's the job of the Congress, is to earmark the money. It's our obligation to tell people how the money's spent. And those who think that we can solve this problem by just getting rid of earmarks, they never talk about the earmarks overseas. The hundreds of millions and not billions of dollars we spend overseas, we earmark them to certain countries, into building military buildings overseas. What about the earmark for the embassy in Beirut, in Iraq? It's cost $1 billion. That's an earmark. But the side that says that we can solve this problem by cutting earmarks never talks about these earmarks. Just think of the earmarks in the military budget. I mean, billions. And what do? We finally elect a different Congress to deal with some of these supplementals and emergency spending that we don't have the guts to put on the budget. So we elect a new Congress, and what do? We have the continuation in all the budgets presented today. We're still going to finance the war as an off-budget emergency item. We're not being honest with ourselves. And we pretend that the problem is there, and that if we talk about it, it's going to go away. The way I see it is there's only one way that we're going to attack this, and that is decide what our government ought to be doing. And the Constitution is very clear. The government ought to preserve our liberties, give us a strong national defense. It shouldn't run our lives. It shouldn't run the economy. It shouldn't police the world. We're not supposed to be the policemen of the world. But everybody talks about it, and both sides of the aisle have no hesitation to spend every cent the executive branch asked for to run a war that was never declared. We now spend $1 trillion a year going up. This year it's going to go over $1 trillion to run the operations overseas. That means all the foreign aid and all the military, $1 trillion to do things we shouldn't be doing. They interviewed 3,400 military personnel just recently, military leaders, and 82% of them said, our military is weaker today than it was 5 years ago. So all this money spent, and all this policing in the world, and all this deficit, and financially, we're coming down. I mean, just today, the dollar went down 1.2% in one day after this steady erosion. It comes from the fact of deficits. And why does that hurt the dollar? Because we don't have enough money. We don't tax enough. We don't can't tax anymore. People are overtaxed. We can't borrow anymore because interest rates are up. So we print the money. And the more money you print, the further the dollar goes down, then everything goes up in price. So it's a cycle that's coming to an end. And the value of the dollar is really telling the whole story. We've overextended ourselves because we do not challenge the whole notion of what we ought to be doing here and what our government ought to be all about. Because we have drifted so far from the original intent of the Constitution, there is no hesitation. There are debates that go on here endlessly. One side of the aisle says, well, we need more and more money for the military. We can't cut one single cent on overseas expenditure. And the other side says, oh, no. Can I have another minute, Kevin?
I would yield the gentleman another minute.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Gentleman is recognized for an additional minute.
So one side said we can't cut, you know, the military expenditure. The other side says we can't cut the entitlements. And then there's an agreement. We raise both. My idea is to have a strong national defense and to get this budget under control, reject the notion that we need to run an empire. We can't afford it. It's going to come down. It always comes down. It has come down all throughout history because eventually the currency is destroyed. We're in 130 countries. We have 700 bases. Our military now is in worse shape than it was 5 years ago, according to our military. So it's time we look at the strategic, the philosophic problems, and I say unless we do this, this will end badly. It's going to end with a major economic crisis. It's going to be worldwide, and we here at home will suffer, not only economically, but inevitably, under these conditions, the people lose their liberty, and our liberties are being eroded every single day that we're here. So yes, we take an oath to obey and uphold the Constitution against foreign domestic. But we're domestic, and we should protect our rights and our budget and the greatness of this country. Thank you.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. This is a man who presented himself for the presidency of the United States, and he was rejected by some 98.5% of the electors. Very, very sad. And as I have always told you, this is the only man who remotely has an idea of what is going on, which is badly expressed, by which I actually mean everybody else doesn't even have the remotest idea of what is going on, but Ron Paul has a very good idea of what is going on. And he will not be president of the United States. Well, I think it's very, very sad. Okay. My name is Richard Martin. This is Richard Martin's wake-up call. And let me quickly give you the information that you need in order to interact with me. You would need my private number if you wish to talk to me about personal issues. And that is 305-357-5575. I repeat that. 305-357-5575. If you would like to send me an email, which many people do, you may do so by writing to the following address, rmartin@gscorporation.com. Let me repeat that, please. And it's all to be written in lowercase. The GS stands for Global Strategic. The company Global Strategic Investments is where I work in Miami. And please remember to write the word corporation out in full. Corporation. Okay. Again.
richardmartin at gscorporation.com. And then we come to the most exciting moment, which is the moment where I tell you my toll-free number for you to call in and air your particular concerns for everybody to enjoy. And the toll-free number is 888-873-4643. Once more, 888-873-4643. And please do remember that the engineer, Eric, is human. He has a heart which beats and a pulse which pulsates. And every so often he needs to leave his desk in order to carry out other duties. And so he has promised to let me know when he does this. And therefore, I will let you know that it is not a good idea to call because nobody will answer the phone. And then the voicemail will kick in. And if it kicks in, then indeed you will be upset because you will feel that there is nobody there and you will be right. So there is no indication that he is not there. So if you wish to call in right now, please do so. And he will answer the phone. If I'm talking about something else, I will find a spot to introduce you and your call, and because that, to me, is the most important thing. It is the priority. Number one is my callers and their concerns. So this is really an opportunity for you to ask your questions, and I really hope that you will do so live and on the air. Okay. Well, the piece of good news that we have for you today, courtesy of Progressive Radio Network, is that the archives are back. Yes, indeed. We have a new employee whose job it is, apparently, to keep up the archives. And so you will find that all the archives have now been posted, and hopefully you will enjoy some of them. And please tell your friends who might have had a problem with the archives in the past that they are indeed back. I know that 2 p.m. on a Thursday afternoon Eastern Time is not the most propitious moment to listen to broadcasts from the likes of me, but now you will be able to do so. And we have been working on a different form of archival system, but it looks like for the time being we are going to be able to depend once more on a Progressive Radio Network. Okay. Right. Well, you probably heard of the Blackstone Group, and I just thought I would trundle out this particular piece of gossip. Mr. Stephen Schwarzman, the CEO of the buyout firm Blackstone Group, raked in an unbelievable $5.1 billion in 2007. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me right. $5.1 billion of money for Mr. Schwarzman in 2007. I'm sure he would all like to hear from you with your suggestions as to how he might spend this money. And I suggest strongly that you write to him and let him know your creative ideas about how he might fritter away his newly begotten gains. And so just to fill you in a little more here, he has, and I quote from the Daily News business writer, he's blown the cover off the super secret world of hedge fund billionaires with his unapologetic spending and high public profile. He drew a salary of $350,000 plus another $350 million in cash compensation. But that's in addition to the $4.77 billion he cashed in for part of his share of Blackstone, the company he co-founded with financier Pete Peterson after they arranged an initial public offering last June. The 10-figure pay package should buy him plenty of stone crabs, which the mogul tosses back at $400 a pop, according to the Wall Street Journal, which also said Schwarzman can blow $3,000 for a week's worth of food for himself and his wife. Well, last year's paycheck makes him one of Wall Street's biggest earners. Even the top boss of Wall Street heavyweight Goldman Sachs, Lloyd Blankfein, that I've mentioned here in this program, made just $68 million in 2007, a fraction of Schwarzman's pot. Well, all of these people made their money betting against investments tied to the plunging mortgage market. Schwartzman, who's a Yale buddy of President Bush, by the way, isn't the only one bringing in megabucks. But other hedge fund billionaires tend to be a bit more discreet. Last February, he tossed himself a lavish 60th birthday party at the Park Avenue Armory. What else happened? Well, last week, Schwartzman pledged $100 million to the New York Public Library, which was very decent of him, which in return, of course, will name the main Fifth Avenue branch after him. Well, good luck, Mr. Schwartzman. Enjoy your spoils. Well, the big news since I last spoke to you is from the Fed, which has said that it plans to make up to $200 billion available through weekly auctions. This, of course, is nothing more than a thinly disguised effort to put yet more money into the system and destroy the dollar even further, along the lines that Ron Paul was complaining about a few moments ago. Officials from the Fed told reporters on condition of anonymity that the program may be increased as needed. The Fed coordinated the effort with central banks in Europe and Canada, which plan to inject up to $45 billion into their banking systems. All right, let me see if I've got this straight. I could now walk up to the Fed with my crappy mortgage-backed securities and trade them in for rock-solid treasuries? Well, that's it. I mean, I'd have to take some kind of haircut, but I can turn something nobody else wants at any price and is therefore effectively worthless into something liquid and valuable. See, what they're really doing is the Fed, which will make these kind of loans, but in every case up until now, based on collateral of AAA-rated securities, is now so desperate that it is prepared to take in just about anything, you know, mortgage-backed securities, collateral debt obligations, anything at all, which smacks of, you know, paper, however worthless it may be, they'll take it. And of course, this is totally anathema, and I'm not even sure that it corresponds to the brief of the Federal Reserve. I'm not sure that they're, in fact, entitled to do this. But they are so desperate to get liquidity into the system in order to get the banks, make the banks move again with their loans, that they're basically they're putting themselves in a situation where theoretically they could be the Federal Reserve could be bankrupt, and so this is in fact the situation we find ourselves in today is infinitely worse than the already appalling situation in which we found ourselves this time last week. You know, I take something with real credit risk and trade it in for something with no credit risk. It's like, you know, trading junk for gold. I mean, this is extraordinary that the Fed should do this. There's no indication that Bernanke ever suggested that he would go to these lengths. And I think this is just the beginning. I mean, I have no idea where this might lead. Needless to say, it does nothing for the economy. The insolvency issue still remains unaddressed. If you couldn't pay your mortgage before, you still can't. Home prices will still continue to correct downwards. The banks still won't expand their lending and stimulate the economy. They know these measures are temporary, and they know their collateral will continue to deteriorate. Every 28 days, they will have less collateral value to swap for treasuries as their mortgage-backed securities continue to shrivel up in value. So basically, we have yet more debt, which is being plunged into the system, in return for nothing at all. It's again the same old system of throwing crates of whiskey at an alcoholic. I mean, the banks are being encouraged to loan out the very money which has caused this terrible problem in the first place. The money which was responsible for the whole pyramid of debt, as everybody in debt will rightly perceive. I mean, if you yourselves right now have debts, and you know you have to pay them back, that being the operative word, you know you have to pay them back, what is the point in taking on even more debt, which is simply going to compound the problem? I mean, if in fact what you're really cynically saying is, okay, we'll take just as much debt as these fools will give us, and then we'll run for it. We'll just abandon everything. That, of course, was not on the minds of the homeowners when they took their original loans with no money down and artificially low rates adjusting in 2 years' time. The last thing on their minds was that in 2 years they would be, you know, creating jingle mail and putting the keys in the mailbox and running away from their homes. But you have to ask yourself if this kind of moral condition doesn't encourage people to do just that. I mean, we are now in a terribly, terribly difficult situation. We have hedge funds going under. We have various investment funds which are going broke because, like the Carlyle Fund, which has just gone up in smoke. It was down 73% on the Amsterdam Stock Exchange today. That is a subsidiary of the Carlyle Group, which is heavily invested in by the likes of George Bush's family and others. They were leveraged at 32-1. Well, can you imagine that the market has only got to move by 1/32nd in the wrong direction, and they're wiped out? But, you know, it's the old adage of, you know, if you owe $1 to the bank owns you. But if you own $100 billion to the bank, you own the bank. And they know that they've got it coming to them. They've got money coming to them for the asking, except that what they didn't cater for was that the investors would be requiring their money back. The investors don't want to be involved anymore. They want their money. And if they can't get their money, they'll take the AAA-rated investments, thank you very much. So now we have a really big problem on our hands. Very, very ugly indeed. Ladies and gentlemen, the Federal Reserve has lost control. And I say this in all seriousness, and there's no hyperbole involved whatsoever in my statement. The Federal Reserve has absolutely no idea what to do about this problem. None. And that is why I played you Ron Paul's talk at the beginning of my hour today. Because he has understood this. Why? I have no idea. And neither do I have any idea why he is the only person in Congress that seems willing or able to address this problem. And it stuns me that when you listen to, you know, CNBC or Bloomberg or any of these other financial programs, or you look at the financial press, it stuns me that nobody has a clue and nobody is prepared to address this. What are they thinking? Ladies and gentlemen, we are approaching financial Armageddon. There is no other way for me to put this. There is no way in which these debts will ever be paid back. And there is no facility in the economy to address this problem. It cannot be done. And the dollar is collapsing. It is truly collapsing every day now. As Ron Paul said, it collapsed over 1% yesterday. And right now, today, it's down over 0.5% as well. And there is no attention given to this problem. Nobody seems to care. I'm stunned. I never thought I would see the day as a child when I would be grown up enough to inherit this kind of problem and to be made aware of the kind of things that I had heard about that went on during and indeed before the Great Depression. And yet here we are sitting, you know, on the edge of the second Great Depression, and nobody can see it, just like the Titanic, which went down while people were still dancing on the ballroom floor. Okay, right, well, let's move on to a couple of other things which I think will be of interest. There is a really good guide as to the economic fortunes
of the world and how they're doing. And I wondered if ever any of you have stopped to consider what that might be. Let's say you want to ignore the pundits on CNBC. You don't want to read what they lie to you about in the Wall Street Journal or the Business Week, but you really want to know how the economy is doing. What can you do? Well, it's very simple. The one area of the economy which cannot lie is the transport area. The area, you know, when you see trucks trundling down the road, you know that they are full of goods or that they're returning from having delivered goods. And therefore, when you see lots of trucks, you can be sort of fairly sure that business is booming along quite nicely. And when you don't see any trucks, you can be forgiven for thinking that there isn't much business. Well, we have a gauge, in fact, not of trucks, but of shipping. And it's called the Baltic Dry Index. And it is an index of the Baltic shipping rates. In other words, how much is being charged and how much volume of transactions are passing through the waters. And it's a worldwide index. And needless to say, when that index is going up, it means that things are going well. And when it goes down, it means things are going very badly. Well, it doesn't take a genius to know that, in fact, things are going badly and that the index is falling like a stone right now. But it might be an idea for you to consider the Baltic Dry Index. It's actually an index which covers dry bulk shipping rates, and it's managed by the Baltic Exchange in London. It takes in 40 shipping routes, measured on a time charter and voyage basis, and it's an average, basically, of the various different indices based on professional assessments made by a panel of international shipbroking companies. So you can get it online at the Baltic Dry Index. It's quite a long website, so the best thing to do is just go into Google and Google Baltic Dry Index, and a chart will pop up, and then you can see for yourselves what's going on. So that's the Baltic Dry Index. All right. Once again, my phone number, I shall give it to you if you haven't already got it, if you came into the program late. It is 888-873-4643. Once more, I give you the phone number of our toll-free line into the studio at Progressive Radio Network. It is 888-873-4643. Okay. Let's talk a little about the magic of money creation and destruction. Few people really understand what this is, and I have had it in mind to talk to you a while about this, and it's always been sort of on the back burner, and I sort of put it behind the question time and people's questions when they call in. But this seems to be a good moment to talk about in a little bit of detail surrounding how money, in fact, comes into the system and what happens. There was an economist called Hyman Minsky who lived between 1919 and 1996, very well-known Austrian economist who observed money is created whenever credit is issued. In other words, obviously, if I'm able create credit for you, basically you will then be able to spend money which I have made available to you through the credit process, which then will have to be paid back along with interest. Before I continue, let's have a look with let's look at Steve Panero, who's just sent me an email, and he says, with what you're saying, how can we trust the government to protect the dollar at all? How can we trust them with anything? Would it be that bad to convert your savings to gold and put that gold into a safety deposit box in Switzerland and leave it alone for 3 years? It sounds absurd, but
Mark Farber and Jim Rogers are convinced the dollar is a doomed currency. Yes, Steve, thank you for your letter. And it is absolutely true. They are indeed convinced that it is a finished currency. There's no reason why it shouldn't continue as a doomed currency. The pound sterling was the same in times past. There used to be, around the time of the end of the Second World War, $5 to the pound, and the pound declined in value so that a few years ago it was actually just for a few days or even a few hours, it was at parity with the dollar. There was $1 to a pound. Right now it's more or less $2 to a pound, but the pound has nevertheless continued to be used. People have simply paid more pounds for their goods and services, and the pound continued on its merry way. So I think that you're looking at a continued decline in the value of the dollar. People tend to work around this, Steve. They tend to create inflation to compensate for this. The problem with the gold, as I've explained before, and people often ask me about this on the show, this question of gold, the problem with gold is that there is no way to create stable value for gold, as was the case when we had the gold standard at $35 an ounce. So if we have no way to create a stable gold value, then gold becomes a speculation, which may be a very well-placed speculation, but it can also be extremely dangerous. And so whereas in times past I would have been enthusiastic about holding gold, I must decline to continue that enthusiasm at this point, because there is so much volatility in the markets that it is very possible that gold could lose 50% of its value and then take another 5 years to build itself back up to these levels. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but to my way of thinking, it really is too speculative. So I'm going to suggest that you don't hold gold. I would feel that if you manage your affairs intelligently around the situation, you will come out very well indeed, with a mixture of the kind of investments we talk about, and also at some point in the future, bonds will be a fantastic investment because people will buy them as the only investment around, and at that point you can then convert your dollars into other currencies and buy the bonds in other currencies, which is what I often tell people to do. Don't buy all your bonds in the dollar. Spread them around among genuine AAA-rated investment bonds in other countries, and that should do it for you. But the U.S. dollar is probably a doomed currency. Yes, I would think so. I think we will see a big rally in the dollar at one point, but it is, unfortunately, the reflection of the misguided policies of the government, which, as you rightly point out, Steve, we really can't trust. Of course we can't trust the government. Absolutely not. Jim Sullivan has come in with an email saying, "Hi, Richard, do you think our situation today in the United States is comparable to the Weimar Republic in 1933? Actually, it was about 1923, Jim. By 1933, Hitler had already come to power. So the Weimar Republic, the inflation was a very abrupt and very brief phenomenon at that point. And then you say, Jim, if so, what do you think the logical conclusion is for the dollar and the republic? Well, I don't want to go into political discussions here about where things might go in the United States. This is for another time, another kind of program. My brief here is really economics and to try to help you through the current situation. But I do think that the dollar is a doomed currency. I do think that Jim Rogers is right about that, and Mark Farber as well. So I don't think that the country or the currency is comparable to the Weimar Republic, that was a hyperinflation which was deliberately induced by the German government to avoid having to pay back all those debts from the reparations from the First World War. It was a very cynical way of inflating their way out of their responsibilities, and it worked. But there's no implication that that should be the case this time round. So people, I think, wrongly equate the situation today with the Weimar Republic. In addition, I feel we're going into a deflationary environment as opposed to an inflationary one. Okay? So the answer is no, I don't think so. Thanks for the email, Jim. Let's go back to talking a little bit more about money. Now, Hyman Minsky, that I mentioned, observed that money is created whenever credit is issued, which I'm sure you can understand. Now, the corollary is that money is destroyed when debts are not paid back. That is why home mortgage defaults create liquidity crises. This simple insight demolishes the myth that the central bank is the sole controller of a nation's money supply. While the Federal Reserve commands a monopoly on the issuance of the nation's currency in the form of Federal Reserve notes, which are legal tender, quote, legal tender for all debts, public and private, it does not command a monopoly on the creation of money in the economy. The Fed does, however, control the supply of, quote, high power money, end of quote, in the regulated partial reserve banking system. By adjusting the required level of reserves and by injecting high-power money directly into the banking system, the Fed can increase or decrease the ability of banks to create money by lending the same money to customers multiple times, less the amount of reserves each time, relaying liquidity to the market in multiple amounts because of the mathematics of partial reserve. Thus, with a 10% reserve requirement, a $1,000 initial deposit can be loaned out 45 times less 10% reserve withheld each time to create $7,395 of loans and an equal amount of deposits from borrowers. But money can be and is created by all debt issuers, public and private, in the money markets, many of which are not strictly regulated by government. While a predominant amount of global debt is denominated in dollars, on which the Fed has monopolistic authority, the notional value used in structured finance denominated in dollars, which reached a record $681 trillion in the third quarter of 2007, is totally outside the control of the Fed. Now, this is very important to understand, because people ask, well, if the money supply out of the Fed is not increasing, which, by the way, it isn't increasing significantly, how come the money supply as pertains to the economy in general appears to be burgeoning forth? Well, the answer is that it comes from sources within the economy but outside the control of the Fed, which is why I said to you earlier on that the Fed has no control over the economy anymore, because it has no control over the amount of money that is being issued by subsidiary corporations of banks and other financial services companies. What you would call virtual money, therefore, is largely unregulated, with the dollar acting merely as an accounting unit. So if I make you a loan, or if I extend you credit, and no actual physical dollars changes hands, the best that I can do is to offer you digital dollar credits, which you are going to have to pay back in real money. So if the money isn't there to pay me back, what are you going to do about making me good on your loan? You see, when U.S. homeowners default on their mortgages en masse, they destroy money faster than the Fed can replace it through normal channels. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what has caused this liquidity crisis, which is, in turn, deflating asset prices and reducing monetized wealth. You see, as the debt securitization market collapses, banks cannot roll over their off-balance sheet liabilities by selling new securities. and they're forced to put the liabilities back on their own balance sheets. Well, when they put their liabilities back on their balance sheets, that reduces any liquidity they may have, which further exacerbates the liquidity crisis. You know, since the volume of debt securitization is geometrically larger than bank deposits, a widespread inability to roll over short-term debt securities will threaten banks with insolvency. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why these banks are going to go under. All right. Let's take John Nevin's email. He says to me, Richard, per one of your recent programs that I was finally able to listen since the archive was finally updated, I composed this letter and sent it. None of my colleagues at the office will have the balls to do this or even see a reason to, so I will not bother. It's sad. Let me know what you think. I didn't put the threat, quote-unquote, in there, e.g. holding them responsible, since I would probably end up getting fired. Well, John, you have put another sentence in here, and I apologize. I didn't mean to read this, but basically, sorry about that. But we will arrest the process right there. And ladies and gentlemen, may I ask you, as this comes up, I do ask you if you are going to write me an email and you would like to keep the contents of the email confidential, I would request that you put that request at the beginning of the email, because what I tend to do is I open them up during the show and I start to read, and I don't want to read the most important thing last, if you get my meaning. So if you would please try to remember that, that would be very useful. Gary Wagner has a question, and I would like to read it to you. Is it possible that the government wants to make a regional currency and get rid of the dollar? Also, if you expect to import goods from Europe for business, should you convert money to euros or pounds and keep it there? Thanks, Gary. Yes, Gary, you should. And it's called hedging, and it's what the futures markets are used for all the time. It's exactly the same as if you are a soybean elevator and you have soybeans that you will bring to market in, say, September, and you want to lock in a price for your soybeans. You will basically sell them today on the futures markets for delivery in September, and then you will know what price you are going to get for your soybeans in September, come what may. Now, if the price goes up in the meantime, you will basically buy back your soybean contract at a loss, but you will sell your final beans at a profit vis-a-vis today's prices. So you will even out the deal. If you have sold your soybeans for delivery in September today and the price goes down in the meantime, then you very simply ignore the market, and you sell them according to the contract that you have taken out today at the same price as today's price. Come September, you will sell your soybeans at that price according to the contract. So you do the same thing when you are importing goods from Europe. There is also a futures market in the dollar vis-a-vis several currencies, and you can use that to hedge your future needs for currency, or your future takings in that currency. If, for example, you are an exporter, you will simply do the same thing as if you're an importer, but the other way around. In one case, you will buy the currency against the dollar today, and in the other case, you will sell the currency against the dollar today for future needs. So that's a good question, Gary. And the other part of your question was whether the government wants to make a regional currency and get rid of the dollar. Personally, I doubt it. I think the United States wants to have exclusive control over its currency. As I'm sure you were aware, if you are a country like Panama or Ecuador, a couple of other countries which whose currencies are the United States dollar, your economy is entirely dependent on what Bernie Bernanke does in the United States. And there may be advantages to to running your economy on the United States dollar, but there are certainly disadvantages as well, because you're not going to assume that your economy is exactly the same as the American economy. It has its own needs, its own particular quirks, but you will have to play by the rules of the Federal Reserve. And that is one of the important failings, in my opinion, of the euro, where all these different disparate countries have to depend on the European Central Bank in terms of a general interest rate environment, because people are obviously going to gravitate to countries and to sovereign issues which offer the highest rates. So that there are disadvantages of that, but that's certainly a very good question, and I'm sure you're referring, by the way, to the Amero, which I think is a non-starter, but you know, finally, we will find out one way or the other whether I'm right. Okay. No callers. I understand that nobody has seen fit to actually call into the show. That's fine. The emails will work as well. The number, however, again, I will give you is 888-873-4643. So we have about 10 minutes. If anybody wants to call in with a question, I would love to hear from you. Again, it's 888-873-4643. Okay. Right. Let's go back to our story about money. And I was talking about how money basically can in fact, the money supply itself can be greater in amount than the bank deposits that exist. That's why we are likely to see insolvency in many banks, because there simply will not be the amount of money, in real money, in existence to pay off the bank's debts. You see, money is not wealth. It's only a measurement of wealth. Now, remember this. It's very important. It will help you to understand a lot of the current problems that we have today if you will, in some sense, perceive that the money it's like a gauge. Heat, for example, is not the temperature. The temperature, as expressed in Fahrenheit, is only a measure of heat, okay? And money is only a measure of wealth. You know, a given amount of money qualified by the value of money as expressed in its purchasing power represents an account of wealth at a given point in time in an operating market. Given a fixed amount of wealth, the value of money is inversely proportional to the amount of money the asset commands. The higher the asset price in money terms, the less valuable the money. When debt pushes asset prices up, it in effect pushes the value of money down in terms of purchasing power. In an inflationary environment, when prices are kept high by excess liquidity, monetized wealth stored in the underlying asset actually shrinks. This is the reason why hyperinflation destroys monetized wealth. When the central bank withdraws money from the market by selling government securities, it in essence reduces sovereign credit outstanding, because a central bank never needs to borrow its own currency, which it can issue at will, the only constraint being the impact on inflation, which can become a destroyer of monetized wealth when inflation is tolerated not as a stimulant for growth, but merely to prop up an overpriced market in a stagnant economy. Yet debt can only be issued if there are ready lenders and borrowers in the credit market. And the central bank is designed to serve as lender of last resort when lenders become temporarily scarce in credit markets. But when borrowers are scarce, not due to short-term cash flow problems, but due either to low credit rating or insufficient borrower income to service debts, the central bank has no power to be a borrower of last resort. The role of borrower of last resort belongs to the federal government, as Keynes observed when he advocated government deficit spending to moderate business cycles. The Bush administration, through the Treasury, sells sovereign bonds to finance a hefty fiscal deficit. The only problem is that it spends both taxpayer money and proceeds from sovereign bonds mostly on wars overseas, leaving the domestic economy in a liquidity crisis. Many homeowners with zero or even negative home equity cannot afford the reset high payments of their mortgages with current income, which has been rising at a much slower rate than their house payments. And as housing mortgage defaults mount, the liquidity crisis deepens from money being destroyed at a rapid rate, which in turn leads to counterparty defaults in the $45 trillion of outstanding credit swaps, which are CDSs, and collateralized loan obligations backed by corporate loans that destroy even more money, which in turn will lead to corporate loan defaults. Proposed government plans to bail out distressed homeowners can slow down the destruction of money, but it would shift the destruction of money, as expressed by falling home prices, to the destruction of wealth through inflation masking falling home value. Credit insurers such as MBIA, the world's largest financial guarantor, whose shares, by the way, have dropped 81% in 2007 to $11 from a high of $73, are on the brink of bankruptcy from their deteriorating capital position in light of rating agencies' reviews of residential mortgage-backed securities and collateralized debt obligations that have been insured by MBA or similar insurers, reviews that are expected to stress claims-paying ability. Now, as I've said before, as I'm sure you've understood, and this is something which has come up many, many times, and it's one of the chief problems that we face with these insurers today, the maintenance of a AAA credit rating is of utmost importance to the bond insurers like MBIA, because they need a strong credit rating in order to guarantee debt. You know, Moody's, Standard & Poor's and Fitch are all reviewing the financial strength ratings of bond insurers, which write insurance policies and other contracts protecting lenders from defaults. The AAA credit rating of the bigger bond insurers is crucial, because any demotion could lead to downgrades of the $2.4 trillion of municipal and structured bonds they guarantee. This could force banks to increase the amount of capital held against bonds and hedges with bond insurers, which, by the way, is a worrying prospect at a time when lenders such as Citigroup and Merrill are scrambling to raise capital. Significant changes in counterparty strength of bond issuers, insurers, could lead to systemic issues. Now, you know, this is very important, ladies and gentlemen, and I know that this is, probably shouldn't have mentioned this right at the end of a show when you're all probably kind of tired of listening to my voice, but it is essential to understand this if you are really to have a grasp of what is going on in the economy and why things are going so badly and why this whole thing is going to just collapse. Again, let me state that if the federal government, in the form of the Federal Reserve, is not exclusively responsible for the money that is made available through the loans of credit into the system, there is no possible way in which it can ever be paid back. This extra so-called money, which is nothing more than digital dollars, which are lent from one institution to another, is in effect then considered money, even though it isn't money, and is expected to be paid back in real money. And that's the problem. There isn't enough of this real money to pay back the people who made these loans. But unfortunately, those people who made the loans aren't the only people that will be affected by this. The banks themselves will be contaminated with the problem, because although they lent real money out in good faith, they won't get it back because the borrowers will have spent that money elsewhere and will not have enough liquidity with which to pay back the banks. So you see, when they talk about a liquidity crisis, what they're actually talking about is a real money crisis. There simply isn't enough real money to go around. And it isn't because the Federal Reserve then goes out and panics and throws more money into the system that solves anything, because that money which the Federal Reserve has just lent is itself debt and has to be paid back. So this is like a kind of nightmarish feedback scenario, where the more money that goes out into the system, the more debt is created, the more interest has to be paid, and the less money there is to do all these things with. And I mentioned this once before. I mentioned the example of a farm
and somebody who basically wanted to buy some property, which formed part of that farm. And it's all very well to buy the property with the amount of money in existence, but if no extra money ever comes into the system and nobody gets to become the true owners of that money, there is no way in which that farm, that simple transaction of somebody buying a portion of the farm and owing the farmer interest, there is no way that interest will ever get paid. Think of it just on a micro, in a micro context. It's a very serious situation. There isn't enough money. And because the financial authorities have turned a blind eye and allowed all this nonsense to take place, this crazy greed, this chase after, you know, nirvana, which doesn't exist, everybody is going to suffer. All businesses will suffer. All asset holders will suffer. The only people that won't suffer are people with money, with people who simply have what they're supposed to have, which is real money, either in the bank or in a safe deposit box. I don't mean gold, I mean money, or the equivalent of money, which is probably T-bills. And T-bills will do the trick because the government will always honor its short-term debts. And that's why you must have T-bills, ladies and gentlemen. If you need to hold anything and you want to make a little bit of interest, hold T-bills, nothing else. Not U.S. government funds. That is a lie. It's a misnomer. That includes government agencies like Fannie Mae, which are not direct obligations of the federal government, and they will not honor the debts of Fannie Mae when push comes to shove. So do not get involved in stuff called U.S. government money market funds. The only funds you need to own are Treasury money market funds. And I'm getting listeners calling me all the time, well, I'm being told that there's this and that and the other, there's a U.S. government, and it's, oh yes, the government owns this and guarantees that. It's nonsense. It's a lie. It's a trick to get you to sign up for these things. Don't fall for it. The one thing which is of use to you in terms of total security is Treasury bills or Treasury money market funds. I have an email from Rodney who says you predict monetary deflation. If you are wrong and there is inflation, will real estate hedge inflation? The answer is, if I'm wrong, yes, it will. Yes, if I am wrong, then real estate will be a wonderful thing to have, because then you will have something which will be payable in ever cheaper dollars, and that will work wonders for you. But that's not now, Rodney. That was yesterday. That was the past. That worked in times past. We've gone into a new environment here. Do understand that. Be aware that we are not dealing with the same phenomenon of inflation and monetary growth that characterized life in the past. Now we're dealing with a solvency problem. People are not solvent anymore. This is deflation, and it is a killer. Ladies and gentlemen, I thank you for your time. Have a wonderful weekend. As always, I will be back with you 1 p.m. on Monday afternoon. This is Richard Martin saying thanks and bye-bye for now.